The sexual revolution is not a thing of the left. It is not a thing of the right. It is an ideology all on its own, a freestanding ideology.
Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse speaking at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case conference.
And it has, like all of the other toxic ideologies of the 20th century, it is a fantasy ideology. Now, what do I mean when I say it's a fantasy ideology? I mean it is something that people believe because they like the way it makes them feel, and they believe it in spite of the evidence.
You can listen to Dr. Morse's presentation, Making the Case Against the Sexual Revolution, on an audio DVD from both of our 2017 Making the Case conferences. This DVD contains almost 20 hours of teaching and preaching. We'll send it to you for a year-end, tax-deductible donation of $300. Find out more and order by clicking the DVD logo at issuesetc.org.
We still have a very, very high embryo loss in creation of life in the laboratory. So I think it's very disingenuous to say that it was a pro-life approach to making babies.
And this is just madness to say. And each one of us, all 7 billion, all have these magical divine destinies from forever where we're all going to change the world. You know, that's what's destroying the world.
Another way to think about what I've called cliche theology is your rhetoric running your theology, or is the theology running the rhetoric?
Moms in labor, love, Issues, etc.
It's tempting to think that there is morality, we might say traditional morality, and then there's immorality. Everything else is a rejection of morality. But that is not true. There are all different kinds of moralities in the world. The real question is, which of those moralities corresponds to the way things really are? Because, of course, if you look out into the world of our secular progressivism here in the West, there is an intense, very ferociously defended set of rules, and behind it, a worldview or a set of worldviews that are as religiously held as any traditional Christian morality is held by any traditional Christian. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. on this Wednesday afternoon, December the 20th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about secularist views of life and sexuality. Dr. Nancy Piercy will be our guest. In the second hour of the program, we'll be looking forward to the fourth Sunday in Advent, according to the one-year lectionary, the testimony of John the Baptist from John chapter 1. Pastor David Peterson will be our guest. Joining us to talk about secularist views of life and sexuality, Dr. Nancy Piercy. She's professor of apologetics and scholar in residence at Houston Baptist University, fellow at the Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture, editor of the Piercy Report, and author of several books, including her latest, Love Thy Body, Answering Hard Questions About Life and Sexuality. Dr. Piercy, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you. Good to be here.
You point out early in your book, your latest book, that secular morality doesn't fit the real universe. What does that mean? Why is that so important?
Well, secular morality is based on a secular view of nature. Morality is always based on your view of what is nature. And ever since Charles Darwin proposed his theory of evolution, secular thinkers have been saying that humans are just products of blind, material, undirected processes. We have no special dignity or purpose or status. And as a result, the body, which is part of nature, is reduced to a clump of matter. It's a collection of atoms and molecules that's not really any different from any other chance configuration of matter. It's just raw material that we can use to further whatever human agenda we have, like any other natural resource. Now, this didn't just change people's view of science. It changed people's view of morality because people decided the human body has no special purpose or dignity of its own, and that we're the ones who decide its moral meaning. We're the ones who decide what's right or wrong to do with our bodies. And so as a result, when we get to the specific issues of abortion, homosexuality, transgenderism, and so on, we find that actually the secular view of morality discounts the body, discounts our biological identity, and it's, ironically, it's the Christian morality that actually gives greater dignity to the body and to biology. Because after all, in the Christian view, God created humanity, and therefore our physical body has a purpose. And we don't just decide for ourselves what's right or wrong. We are meant to take our cues from the facts of nature and the structure of our body when we make moral decisions. And that's why a Christian ethic always takes into account the facts of biology, and that's whether you address abortion, like the scientific facts about when life begins, or when you address sexuality, the facts about sexual differentiation, reproduction, and so on. A Christian ethic is always respectful of the body and the purposes that God built into nature and biology.
You have to adopt, in order to have the secular morality, what you call kind of a two-story duality, kind of a radical division that you mentioned just in passing there a moment ago. Go into a little more detail.
Yeah, let me start with abortion, because I think that's where it's easiest to see. So most secular bioethicists will acknowledge today that human life begins at conception. You know, the evidence from DNA and genetics is just too strong. But what they'll say is human life has so little value that it can be killed for any reason or for no reason at all. So in a sense, what they do is they say, well, if life as we know it scientifically is a product of mindless material causes, it has no special purpose or dignity. So why should we give it any moral standing? Why should we give it any legal protection? But then, of course, if you just said that, you could kill anybody. So then they have to come up with some way to make a divide between human life that is expendable and what they call persons. When does a fetus become a person? Well, unfortunately, there's no scientific way to determine it. There's no transition point. There's no point at which a non-person becomes a person that can be detected empirically or scientifically. And so personhood becomes just a postmodern subjective concept that is defined by a different ways by all the different bioethicists out there. There's no one who really agrees on what personhood is. So you essentially have this two-story view of the human person. On the one hand, at a certain point, the fetus is just human, if just in quotation marks. It's just human, and then at a later stage, it becomes a person. And so it's this dualism, this divided concept of the human being, which is really at the heart of the abortion debate today. For a long time, pro-life people would argue that the fetus is human. Well, that's not the argument anymore. Bioethicists agree it's human. But now they're arguing that, no, but it has to become a person. And so, in a sense, they've discarded the science. They've said the science is no longer relevant. We've moved to a philosophical notion of personhood. So that's why I say the secular view of ethics is no longer resting on science or empirical facts or on reality about the universe. It's the Christian view that takes the reality of science into account.
So to stay with the abortion example for a moment, the real debate then, you would say, is not so much when does life begin, but when does life begin to matter?
Right. To use their terminology, when does it become a person?
So this is kind of a foundational worldview that you can find working in various ways through all of the kind of secular moralities that we find out there, whatever the particular, we mentioned abortion, whatever the particular issue might be. How do you square this radical dualism between body or humanity and person, or body and person, with what seems to be a body-obsessed culture?
Right, exactly. That's the first pushback I often get. And what I say to that is, to be obsessed with the body does not necessarily mean you have a high view of the body. To be obsessed with anti-aging and exercise and tuning and sculpting the body does not necessarily mean that you love the body. We're surrounded by photoshopped images that give us unrealistic idealizations that we then feel pressured to live up to. But even then, it's what philosophers call objectifying the body. You still are treating the body as an object rather than as a part of your true personhood. It's very easy for modern people to be in the mindset of somewhat like a luxury car owner polishing and tuning up his car. He's not necessarily treating the car as part of his true self. He's treating it as something that is useful for getting him something he wants. And many people say that the Western mindset, ever since the rise of modern science, has taught us to objectify nature. We now also objectify our bodies. And it's contrary to the Christian view in this sense. Here's one way to get a handle on it. Other religions talk about reincarnation. It's the idea that yourself can somehow leave your body and go become part of another body, a plant, an animal. Christianity has always rejected reincarnation. Why? Because your body is uniquely you. Your body is uniquely you. It cannot, your soul cannot go out and become part of another body. And that high view of the body is what we're trying to recapture. It's a source of, it's the foundation of the Christian view of sexuality and of life and all the other Christian sex ethics. It's a recovery of the biblical view of the body and the value and dignity it has as an integral part of yourself.
So while, let's just turn this to Roe for a second, if we could. While the issue appeared to be for the Roe court, when does life begin, which would be kind of an old school question there, you say that this bifurcation between body and person was already at work in the court.
Yeah, I don't know if most people know this, but if you read Roe v. Wade, the deciding factor is when the Supreme Court justices said, if the fetus were a person, then its right to life would be guaranteed. But, they concluded, it is not a person under the 14th Amendment. So that was actually the heart of Roe v. Wade, was whether the fetus is a person and whether it qualifies as a person under the 14th Amendment. And what people don't realize, of course, is that once you decide that you can have anything, whether it's a fetus or anybody, as soon as you decide you can be human and not a person, you've opened the door to tyranny. You've opened the door to the state being able to say of any group, oh yeah, they're human, but they're not persons. So we're seeing the same kind of reasoning now with assisted suicide or euthanasia. It's just the abortion argument in reverse, whereas abortion supporters said you can be, well, anyone who's not achieved a prescribed level of cognitive awareness is not a person. It's, you know, they're human, but they're not a person. And the opposite of that is justifying euthanasia by saying, well, anyone who loses a certain level of cognitive ability can have their life ended because they're obviously still human, but they're not a person anymore. So at that point, you can be unplugged. You can have your treatment withheld. You can have your food and water discontinued. You can have your organs harvested. So being human is no longer enough for human rights. You have to earn the right to legal protection by maintaining a certain level of neocortical functioning. So that's why this is so dangerous. It's not going to stop with abortion. It's going to spread, as it already is, to any form of human life. If being simply and purely human is not enough for human rights, then any group could be disenfranchised. Any group could be labeled non-human. And we've seen that in history. You know, the history of slavery in America, the concentration camps of the 20th century, we have plenty of evidence of the morally horrific consequences once you decide some group is a sub-person. They're not fully persons.
Dr. Nancy Piercy is our guest. She's authored her latest book called Love Thy Body, Answering Hard Questions About Life and Sexuality, talking about secularist views of life and sexuality. When we come back, she tells a fascinating story about a debate between Stanley Fish and a regular guest here on the program, Dr. Robert George of Princeton University. We'll hear it, what it means, after this.
Religious liberty is the foundational liberty for all forms of free expression. Without religious liberty protected both in law and in spirit, the First Amendment is a dead letter.
Mark Hemingway, speaking at this year's Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And as a result of that, it is vital to understand that the attack on religious liberty is ultimately about political control. It's an unholy admixture of political correctness and bureaucratic imperatives. There's a growing governmental and political infrastructure dedicated to curtailing basic rights for whom Christian bakers and florists are just the tip of the spear. And there's already mountains of evidence that this infrastructure won't just be used to persecute allegedly bigoted Christians, but it'll be used to go after everyone who is speaking out against those in power.
You can listen to Making the Case for Religious Liberty with Mark Hemingway on an audio DVD of our 2017 Making the Case conferences. We'll send it to you for a financial gift of $300. Look for the DVD logo at issuesetc.org.
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Remember when education was about the fundamental skills of reading, writing, and arithmetic? And about reading great literature and studying history to give our kids a model for what it is to be a good person? Memoria Press's classical Christian curriculum offers that very model for your homeschool. Get $5 off your next order by using the coupon code LPR17. For more information, go to memoriapress.com. Memoria Press, a classical Christian education that works.
Comfort, comfort, ye my people, for unto us a child is born, good news of great joy, the titles of Christ, the Magnificat. These are some of the Christmas card themes produced by Ad Crucem. Send a greeting card this Christmas season that's centered on the gospel of Jesus Christ. AdCrucem.com, confessing the faith through art and word. AdCrucem.com, AdCrucem.com.
Look around. This world is full of creeps like me. You look surprised, you shouldn't be. This world is full of creeps like me. And I keep my...
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilk. We're talking about secularist views of life and sexuality on this Wednesday afternoon with Dr. Nancy Piercy, author of the book Love Thy Body, answering hard questions about life and sexuality. You tell a story early in the book about a debate between Stanley Fish and Robert George of Princeton University that you say signals a change in approach that we've been talking about here.
Yeah, this was fascinating. I still remember personally reading an article by Stanley Fish. He's a deconstructionist literature philosopher professor. He wrote in the journal First Things that pro-life people have no right to bring their views into the public arena. Why not? He said, well, because their views are based on faith. Well, abortion advocates are basing their view on science. And so it was Robert George of Princeton who challenged Fish to debate at the meeting of the next American Political Science Association. And in his paper, George argued that in reality, it's the pro-life position that's based on science. After all, we don't bother arguing about the moral worth of life until science has determined that life exists. So pro-life arguments always start with science. Well, Robert George related the story to me afterwards, and he said, it's a customary thing that the two scholars will exchange their papers ahead of time. So when the meeting opened, Stanley Fish threw Robert George's paper on the table and announced, Professor George is right, and he is right to correct me. And of course, the next sound was everyone's jaws dropping to the floor. But later, Fish explained why he made this very surprising turnaround. He wrote an article in First Things correcting himself. And he said, supporters of abortion used to cast themselves as defenders of science. And he said, that's no longer true. Nowadays, it is pro-life people who base their argument on the scientific question of when life begins. Whereas pro-choice people have actually transformed their arguments from science-based to what he called metaphysical or religious ones. And of course, he doesn't mean that in a positive sense. He means in the sense of not related to reality. Metaphysical arguments based on personhood. In other words, the pro-abortion side has basically lost the debate when it comes to science. And as a result, they've shifted tactics, and they've adopted that two-story dualism that we talked about before the break, where they say, okay, fine, we'll acknowledge that the fetus is human in a scientific sense, but who cares about science? What we care about is a metaphysical concept of personhood. And so people have not quite caught up with this and realize that the debate has changed. And in my book, Love They Buy, I gave several more examples of pro-abortion advocates essentially saying, why worry about science? What we really care about is women's rights. Why care about science? What we really care about is you know, giving women freedom from their biology and so on. That is the tack that they are now taking. So it's really fascinating. We need to help people to realize that the tables have turned, that the other side recognizes that science is really supporting the pro-life position, and that they've been pushed, if we talk about the two-story dualism, they've been pushed into the upper story, so to speak, where they're essentially promoting a postmodern subjective concept of personhood, which is just not going to stand in the public arena. It's not objective. It's not based on science. It's not rational.
So how does this dualism that we've been talking about lead to something like what we witnessed over the last several years, finally exposed for what it is, the trafficking in baby body parts by organizations like Planned Parenthood?
Exactly. Exactly. Go back to your materialist view of human life. If materialist, everything goes back to evolution, Darwinism, materialism, naturalism, the idea that nature has no purpose, meaning, or dignity. It's a product of blind material processes. It's coming together by chance. And as a result, life itself has no particular meaning or dignity or status. And so you can take the fetus and you can say, yes, it's biologically human. Scientifically, we have to acknowledge it's human. But then you can say, however, it has no status or dignity, and therefore we can use it for research and experimentation. We can tinker with its genetics. We can sell body parts for profit. We can then we throw it away with the other medical garbage. And it's the same thing with euthanasia. Once you decide that this person is human, but not a person anymore, same thing. You have bioethicists now arguing that you should use human non-persons, that's a new term, human non-persons, for research instead of animals. For medical research, we should use them for harvesting organs. We should keep them alive long enough so we can harvest their organs. We should, and then throw them away with all the other medical waste. So that view of humans as just body parts, the natural resources, like a soybean crop, that's the outcome of the materialist view of life that says we're not products of a loving God, creator. We are products of blind forces, and therefore we have no special purpose, no special status, and the human body can be used as a body shop for bits and parts that we can use, subject only to utilitarian calculus.
How do they avoid, or maybe they don't, the inevitable conclusion that at some point the person who's buying on the market in order to, say, enhance their health, their biological health, they would say, human body parts, will eventually be put on the market themselves?
Oh, in other words, if I'm buying body parts to enhance myself, but I'm going to eventually become in the same position?
Yeah. Eventually, I will. someone will come along and declare me a non-person human, too.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. I have a feeling most of them have not thought that far ahead. But that is the logical conclusion, isn't it? That it's not just that. It's part of human nature that we apply our philosophies to other people, but not to ourselves. Even C.S. Lewis has a wonderful quote where he talks about, he was talking about moral relativism and skepticism. And he said, this moral skepticism is something we apply to other people's values, other people's morality. We're not nearly skeptical enough about our own. We don't really think through our own morality and whether we have a good foundation for it. And I think what you're putting your finger on is kind of the same thing, is that we adopt these materialist views as long as we can apply them to other people. And we often don't think, well, wait a minute, to be logically consistent, I have to apply it to myself as well. And see, people have worldviews and they don't know they have worldviews. They often don't recognize their own worldviews. And that's why one of the most important things I think for Christians is to help people recognize the worldviews that they implicitly hold so that they can realize that they have noxious and harmful consequences, and that maybe if they thought them through, they wouldn't want to hold those views. If you see where those worldviews are really leading, you would go back to the drawing board and rethink and say, I don't like where that's leading. I have to come up with some other premises because that's not where I want to go. That's a story of my own, by the way. That's my story of my own conversion. When I really encountered Christian apologetics for the first time, and I realized where a lot of the secular assumptions that I had sort of carelessly absorbed from my culture led to bad consequences, like moral relativism. Moral relativism meaning you can't really ultimately say anything's wrong. Even the worst evils you cannot condemn. I thought, well, wait a minute. Maybe I don't want to be a moral relativist after all. What else is out there? And, you know, began to reconsider Christianity at that point. So I like where you're going with this, because what you're saying is we have to help people realize the consequences of their own views so they can think more critically about them.
In any case, should those who want to defend this two-tier view of man, that there are mere humans and then there are human persons, should they be required, at least in theory, to write large their ideas? That is to say, how does this apply on a societal scale? What kind of policy will this lead to? To do the thought experiment so that they can see that they're actually walking a road that was very well trod in the 21st century toward genocide and disaster.
Yeah, this is an important point, because it's not just abortion. In my book, Love Thy Body, I show how it applies to abortion, euthanasia, homosexuality, transgenderism, and a whole host of other issues. And the issue is that in every case, essentially, the secular person is saying biology doesn't matter. You know, biologically we're human, but that doesn't matter. Why is that an issue? Because it undercuts pre-political rights. Pre-political rights are based on natural facts, on biology. So an abortion, for example, life used to be a natural right. You know, you had a right to life, rooted in being biologically human. And the state merely recognized it as a prior fact. And the only way the state could legalize abortion was to deny the relevance of biology and decree that some humans are not persons. And so, and then you look at euthanasia, like we said earlier, same thing. You have to deny that certain humans are persons if you want to be able to legalize euthanasia. Or think about gender, transgenderism today. Why is it that the state is taking upon itself the right to tell us, they're starting to pass laws and policies determining who you must call he or she? Why? Because they've essentially said gender is not related to biology, biological sex, whether you're male or female. Gender is related purely to who you are as a person, your feelings, your self-concept. Homosexuality, the same thing. Homosexuality is clearly contrary to the way we were made to function in terms of male and female. It's contrary to the human design for sexuality and reproduction. The only way the Supreme Court could legalize same-sex marriage was to deny the relevance of biology and say, no, it's a marriage is just about the uniting of two persons. In fact, the Supreme Court decision, Obergefell, actually said, biology doesn't matter. What we're doing is protecting personhood. They use that term, personhood. So in all of these areas, what's happening is biology is no longer the determining factor. No longer does the state merely recognize the right to life. No longer does the state merely recognize your gender as a biological fact. No longer does the state merely recognize marriage as a pre-political fact. And parenthood, by the way, too. Now the next issue is going to be parenthood. Same-sex advocates are saying we should no longer ground parenthood in biological relation between parents and children. When the natural facts are dismissed as irrelevant, then what do we have left? We have merely legal rights, and those are the dispensation of the state. What the state gives, the state can take away, and we will no longer have unalienable human rights.
Dr. Nancy Piercy is our guest. She's a scholar in residence at Houston Baptist University. She edits the Piercy Report, And she is a fellow at the Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture. Her latest book is titled Love Thy Body, Answering Hard Questions About Life and Sexuality. When you purchase this book using the Amazon link at our website, a percentage of your purchase will help support the worldwide outreach of Issues, Etc. Just go to issuesetc.org, click Listen on Demand, and look for Love Thy Body by Nancy Piercy. When we come back, how does this dualism play itself out in homosexuality?
So be wise and keep on reading the signs of my body. I'm on tonight, you know my hips don't lie. And I'm starting to feel you, boy. Come on, let's go. Real slow. Don't you see, baby, I see us perfect.
Rocking around your Christmas tree.
Have a holly jolly Christmas.
It's the most wonderful time.
Jingle bell, jingle bell, jingle bell.
Tired of an endless loop of pop Christmas music? Coming December 24th, sacred music for the Christmas season, LutheranPublicRadio.org. Serenity. Stability. Solemnity. Lutheran Public Radio, sacred music for the Christmas season, coming Christmas Eve at LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Give the gift of time this Christmas with a gift certificate from The Cleaning Authority. Call toll-free 1-866-827-0062 or visit thecleaningauthority.com. A happy wife is a happy life. A Christmas gift certificate from your favorite house cleaning service, The Cleaning Authority, 866-827-0062 or thecleaningauthority.com.
Emily finally had to face the truth. Her church choir was a mess.
Katie Schuerman from her new audiobook, House of Living Stones.
Sure, they'd managed to turn out a few decent choral offerings for Sunday worship every now and then, but their confidence and morale were presently hanging lower than pants on a wrapper.
You can purchase and download an audio version of the novel House of Living Stones at Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. House of Living Stones by Katie Schuerman.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues, Etc.
Double your donation to Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois. A special challenge offers a dollar-for-dollar match on any amount donated by the end of the year. Metro East Lutheran engages young adults in a Christ-centered environment and provides an alternative to secular public high schools. You can make a year-end tax-deductible contribution at melhs.org or call 618-656-0043. 40 years greatly blessed. Metro East Lutheran High School.
College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois offers ACT, SAT, and PSAT test prep, scholarship application classes, college and career counseling, and more. Hi, this is Lori Konski, president of College Preparation Station. We have helped our students obtain more than $7 million in tuition scholarships in 12 years. Find out more at cpsprep.com. Let us help you create a vision and find your future. The College Preparation Station in Maryville, Illinois, cpsprep.com.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilk. We're talking about secular views of life and sexuality with Dr. Nancy Piercy, professor of apologetics and scholar in residence at Houston Baptist University, fellow of the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. She edits the Piercy Report and has authored several books, including her latest, Love Thy Body, Answering Hard Questions About Life and Sexuality. Dr. Piercy, how does all of this this dualism we've been talking about, how does it play itself out in the case of homosexuality? You talk about the shift from homosexuality as describing an act to an unchanging condition.
Yeah, that is new, and most people don't realize that we're so inundated with the media today that sexual orientation is immutable. In fact, that's what the Supreme Court said in its same-sex marriage decision. Immutable. That is a totally modern view. Nobody had thought that in back when the Bible, when the New Testament was written, the New Testament called church, the baby church, as it was first growing in a Roman Greco-Roman environment. Many people were homosexual in the sense that they had sex with men having sex with men. It was very common. It was common for men to have sex with other men and have sex with male prostitutes and have sex with male slaves, especially male slaves, because you had complete control over them. And nobody thought it was some kind of exclusive and immutable orientation. It was thought to be an act that people engaged in. All the way up until very recently, it has always been seen as a moral choice, an act that people could engage in, but that had nothing to do with some kind of, you know, their true authentic self, as people would say today. So that's important for us to realize. And it's changing again. By the way, the most important researcher here is a woman named Lisa Diamond. And she's the one who's made it common now for people to talk more about sexual fluidity. If you've probably heard that term, our teenagers certainly have. They talk about sexual fluidity these days because she's with the American Psychological Association and she herself is a lesbian. But she found out scientifically that the vast majority of people are not immutable in their quote-unquote sexual orientation. In fact, most people are fluid. Most people change. The vast majority of people who claim to be or have identified as homosexual actually have changed their label at least once in their lifetime. They go back and forth. So it's a very brief period of time that people have thought sexual orientation is immutable. And you will even find in Love Thy Body, I quote some people who are themselves homosexual advocates who say, we took that tack because we were on the defensive. We wanted to be able to say, don't blame us. We can't help it. And that's no longer useful. So let's stop claiming it. So it's very much in a very changing environment where people are starting to now say again, no, it is an act. It is not part of my immutable authentic self. Now, how does that fit in with the dualism? The dualism is this. Most people realize that genetically, biologically, physiologically, biochemically, males and females are counterparts to one another. Right? That is how the human sexual and reproductive system is designed. So when you embrace a same-sex identity, you're implicitly saying, why should I pay any attention to my body? Why should I let my sexed body, my biological identity, have any say in my moral choices? Why should I respect the structure of my body? So in that way, it is once again saying my body doesn't matter. Matter doesn't matter. What matters is only what I feel on the inside. So it's disassociating psychological identity from biological identity. So it's very fragmenting and focuses on disruption and fragmentation and self-alienation. The consequences of accepting this kind of dualism are very negative. As Christians, we should be pointing that out. We should be saying, you know, you think you're finding liberation, but you're not. You're finding alienation. You're finding inner fragmentation. It is Christianity that gives a basis for a holistic reintegration of personality, because it's saying sexual differentiation is good. It's part of the original creation, and we should respect the dignity of our bodies.
There's another stage to that. I'm not saying that homosexuality inevitably leads to transgenderism, but they're built on the same foundation, aren't they?
Well, it's very, very much the same dualism in the sense, and it's even easier to see, right, with transgenderism, because it specifically says some people can be born in the wrong body. Or as BBC had a video on the subject, and they said the premise of transgenderism is that you can be at war with your body. So it is insisting even more so that the body is irrelevant and insignificant to my body, to my identity, than that the authentic self is strictly a matter of inner feelings. I have an example in my book, Love Thy Body, of a male to female transsexual who actually was trying to raise money on Kickstarter for a documentary. And the documentary was titled, I Am Not My Body. So, I mean, that kind of says it all. Basically, kids down to kindergarten are being taught that their bodies are irrelevant to their identity, that it doesn't matter, that the body doesn't matter. All that matters is your inner feelings, or that if you sense any kind of disjunction between the mind and the body, it's the mind that wins. Well, why accept that, though? Why accept such a demeaning view of the body? It's radically dehumanizing. And after all, our body is a key part of our identity. And so the transgender narrative is estranging people from their own bodies. And this is, again, where Christianity can come in with a very positive argument. You know, it's easy for us to kind of think of Christian morality as negative, you know, don't do it, it's wrong, it's a sin, thou shalt not. But really, the biblical worldview is very positive. It has a high view of the body that leads to a harmony between biological sex and gender identity, that the body and the person together form an integrated psychosexual unity, that matter does matter. And I think this is especially true for the Lutheran heritage, because after all, the Lutheran heritage kind of recovered the notion of, you know, after the medieval period when there was a strong sacred-secular split. It was Luther who really, really challenged that sacred-secular split and said, no, marriage is good. You know, God's creation is good. Our vocations within this creation, in this created order, are good. The former monk marries the former nun, you know, and with that alone, he says more than all of his words could say about the value of marriage and the spirituality of sex, that sex itself is a spiritual thing and gives glory to God. So I think the Lutheran tradition especially has the resources to cast this and cast our arguments in a positive light that will be very winsome in a secular world.
You refer to transgenderism as also trans reality. Why do you call it that?
Well, it seems clear to me that in rejecting, when we talk about the dualism, Francis Schaeffer used the image of two stories in a building so that you could kind of get a mental image of this. So in the lower story is the realm of facts and science and biology. And in the upper story is our sense of personhood and feelings and self-awareness and so on. And essentially what all of these issues, all the ones we've talked about, are denigrating the lower story. They're saying facts and biology don't matter. Whether it's abortion, saying life doesn't matter, being human doesn't matter. Whether it's homosexuality that says my biological identity doesn't matter. Whether it's transgenderism that says, again, biology doesn't matter, it's not part of my authentic self. And all of these cases, they're denying a significant part of reality. You know, it's like I say, it's just so counterintuitive because we tend to think the secular people are the ones who care about this world. They don't. It is the Christians who care about this world. It's Christians who are saying, no, the material reality, the physical reality was created by God and has great dignity and has great value. And you guys are rejecting a huge part of reality. And this is not the first time the Christian church has faced this. We should be encouraged by knowing that the early church was surrounded by world-denying philosophies like Platonism and Gnosticism that treated the physical world as being the place of death, decay, and destruction. And they even taught, Gnosticism even taught that this world was created by a low-level evil deity because, after all, no self-respecting God would get his hands dirty mucking about with matter. And in that context, Christianity was revolutionary. It taught that, no, it was the highest God, it was the supreme deity who created this world. And he pronounced it very good. An even greater scandal at the time was the incarnation, the idea that God himself took on a human body. So the incarnation was the ultimate affirmation of the dignity of the body. And finally, at the end of time, is God going to scrap this material world as if he made a mistake? No. He's going to renew it and restore it. He's going to recreate a new heavens and a new earth. The Apostles' Creed affirms the resurrection of the body. This is an astonishingly high view of the physical world. There's nothing like it in any other philosophy or religion. And that's why, as I say, in Love My Body, I try to give readers the tools to go beyond just a negative message, which is incomplete, you know, don't do it, it's wrong, it's a sin, and to deploy positive arguments showing that the biblical ethic is actually more appealing, more attractive, more positive than a secular ethic.
Nancy Piercy is our guest. We're talking about the secular's views of life and sexuality on this Wednesday afternoon. When we come back, we're going to talk about what this dualist view that stands as a worldview behind secular morality, in the end, must do with human freedom. Stay tuned. Since 2008, Issues Etc. has been operating independently as a production of Lutheran Public Radio Incorporated. Please help us finish in the black for the 10th consecutive year by making a year-end tax-deductible contribution. You can make a secure online donation at issuesetc.org or by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Thanks for listening, and thanks for keeping us in mind at the end of the year.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Are you tired of working out at big box gyms? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Find out more at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. Performancefitness618.com.
Are you concerned that nativity scenes aren't being displayed in public places? Why not display one at your church or your home? The Outdoor Nativity Store produces durable, affordable, and American-made outdoor nativities for Christians around the world. To view a variety of nativity sets, visit OutdoorNativityStore.com. These nativities will hold up under the harshest weather conditions, snow, ice, and wind. The Outdoor Nativity Store, OutdoorNativityStore.com. We're talking about secular's views of life and sexuality. Dr. Nancy Piercy is our guest. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. Dr. Piercy is professor of apologetics and scholar in residence at Houston Baptist University, fellow at the Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture, editor of the Piercy Report, and author of several books, including her latest, Love Thy Body, Answering Hard Questions About Life and Sexuality. Folks, please help us contend for truth in an age of anti-truth by making a year-end tax-deductible contribution to Issues Etc. No gift is too small. You can donate online at issuesetc.org or by check. Make your check payable to Issues Etc. and send it to Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. With only 11 days left in 2017, we're about $48,000 short of projected expenses. Thanks for thinking of us and for listening here at the end of the year, especially keeping us in mind as you consider your year-end giving. Dr. Piercy, what happens when these things, as I said before, do get writ large into policy? You have talked about the challenges, now legal and political challenges, to things like the use of one's preferred pronouns. What becomes of basic human freedom under this kind of worldview and secular morality?
Yeah, that's a good question, because people often think that Christians are just trying to impose their religious-based morality. I get that a lot in places like Twitter. And what we have to help people recognize is that in all of these moral issues, it's actually going the opposite direction. What's happening is, under a secular view, is a great expansion of state power. Let me go through that one by one. For example, abortion. In the past, the law recognized the right to life as a pre-existing, pre-political right. It followed metaphysically on just being biologically human. And the law merely recognized it as a prior fact. The only way the state could legalize abortion was to deny that prior fact and declare that, well, some biological humans are not really persons who are worthy of legal protection. So what did that mean? That means the state has taken on itself the authority to decide which humans qualify for the status of personhood. Now, that is a huge step, and people have still not assimilated it. That means the state can decide who qualifies for the right to life. It does not recognize the right to life as a prior pre-political right, but as something the state can define itself. Or take marriage. In the past, the state recognized marriage as a pre-political right, as a pre-existing biological reality. It's based on, it follows naturally on the fact that we are a sexually reproducing species. But the only way that the law could treat a same-sex couple the same as an opposite-sex couple is to deny that biology has any relevance and to declare that marriage is just a state of mind. It's what you think, what you feel, your emotional commitment. Well, what has the state done then? It has gone from recognizing marriage as a pre-political right to taking on itself the authority to define what marriage is. The state now decides which emotional commitments qualify as marriage, because there's lots of emotional commitments. How are they going to decide? Before, you didn't have to. The state didn't decide. The state merely recognized marriage. Gender. In the past, the state recognized gender as a pre-existing reality. It followed on your biological sex. But the only way the state can treat a trans woman, that is someone who's born male, the same as a biological woman, is to deny that biology has any relevance and to declare gender to be a state of mind. Again, what you think, feel, and desire. So the state has taken on itself the authority to define what gender is. Independent of your biological sex, the state is now passing laws and policies, businesses are passing policies, schools are passing policies, determining who you must call he or she. The next step, as I said earlier in the program, will be parenthood, and that is same-sex advocates are arguing. In the past, obviously, the state recognized parenthood as a pre-existing reality. It's something that followed upon biologically when a mother and a father gave birth to a child. The state merely recognized it as a prior fact. But the only way the law can treat same-sex parents the same as opposite-sex parents is to deny the relevance of biology, because in a same-sex couple, at least one parent is not biologically related to the child. Well, the state has to decide, therefore, that biology is not important. And parenthood is now just a state of mind, what you think and feel towards the child. So the state is in the process right now of taking on itself the authority to define who qualifies as a parent. And it's not going to be based on whether that child is biologically related to you. It will be defined on what the state decides qualifies as parenthood. So notice in each case, the state has dismissed natural realities, has dismissed biological realities, and is substituting legal fiat, just declaring itself what constitutes marriage, gender, and so on. It's not respecting the created world. It's deciding that it has the authority to, by simple decree, make these decisions that used to be outside the realm of politics. So the point is, therefore, that in all of these moral issues we're discussing, the secular ethic is actually leading to a huge expansion of state power. We are not going to be able to be parents, for example, except by permission of the state. This is a huge expansion of state power, and people need to be aware what's at stake.
Dr. Nancy Piercy is professor of apologetics and scholar in residence at Houston Baptist University, fellow at the Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture, editor of the Piercy Report, author of several books, including her latest, Love Thy Body, Answering Hard Questions About Life and Sexuality. You can purchase this under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Dr. Piercy, thank you very much for being our guest.
Well, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
In hour two of Issues Etc. today, we're going to be looking forward to the fourth Sunday in Advent, according to the one-year lectionary, the testimony of John the Baptist, according to John the Evangelist. Why do people mistake John the Baptist for the Christ? They ask him right up front. Big question on their minds. Are you the Christ? If he isn't the Christ, and he says he isn't, then who does he say he is? We'll answer that question with Pastor David Peterson right after this.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 83, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
This holiday shopping season, skip the Fruit of the Month Club. Don't fall for any ridiculous as-seen-on-TV offers. Just say no to ugly sweaters. Instead, give your family and friends the best of Lutheran reflection on faith and life, theology and culture, delivered monthly right to their mailboxes. Give them the Lutheran Witness magazine. Visit cph.org/witness to purchase subscriptions for Christmas or anytime. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.
Trinity Orchard Farm is settled between two rivers, showing the way to the water of life. For worship that is reverent, relevant, and refreshing like pure water, or for excellent education in a unique setting, check out our church and school. We're just 5 miles north of Highway 370 on Highway 94 in St. Charles County. Visit us on the web at trinityorchardfarm.com. That's trinityorchardfarm.com. Our phone number is 636-250-3350.